and they haven't seen anything like what's coming at us in 25, 30 years, maybe ever. It's tremendously big and tremendously wet. Tremendous amounts of water.
It's fun to hear that clip and to think of it in terms of the blue wave, the what everyone appears to say is the blue wave that has come to Washington, D.C. I love that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is already in D.C. raising hell, and she isn't even on the job for almost two more months. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Fire You Can't Put Out. My name is Melvin. I want to thank you so much for being here. So, now that we have the House, but we do not have the Senate, what in the hell does that mean? Well, to anyone that's been here before, and we all have, if you're older than, say, four, it means that there's going to be an awful lot of gridlock, right? They're going to do a whole lot of good things in the House, a whole lot of things that people want done, and they're going to go to the Senate, and they're going to die a slow death. Nothing but gridlock. But what happened in the House gives them the power that the Republicans refused to use for the last couple of years. One branch of government checks another branch of government, checks another branch of government. Eventually, they all check each other. That's the way this is supposed to go. And for the last couple of years, the Republicans have decided that they're not going to do anything. Why? Because that's their guy in there. Now, if Hillary Clinton decides to run for president, well, we're going to investigate her endlessly because Benghazi was her fault. But if your guy gets in there and anybody accuses him of doing anything wrong at any time ever, whoa. What's with the presidential harassment? What's with all these lies? Hey, that's our guy. He didn't do anything wrong. The headline over at Axios, you may have heard about this. Democrats load a subpoena cannon with 85 plus targets. Quoting here, one Democratic senior Democratic source said the new majority, which takes power in January, is preparing a subpoena cannon, like an arena t-shirt cannon. I've got a problem with this analogy because it sort of sounds like you're reaching out to the NASCAR crowd, but that's fine. They're not going to go for you. You're certainly not racist enough. Incoming House Intelligence Chairman Adam Schiff told Axios that he expects Trump to resist the committee's requests, demands, and subpoenas, likely pushing fights over documents and testimony as far as the Supreme Court, which is why it was so important for these guys to get the Supreme Court. Two of the most powerful incoming chairs tell Axios that they will be plotting action far beyond Russian influence in the 2016 elections. And then, ladies and gentlemen, there is the incoming House Appropriations Chair, Nita Lowey.
The Space Force.
Yes.
James Comey's firing.
Yes.
The travel ban.
Yes.
The family separation policy.
Absolutely.
Hurricane relief in Puerto Rico.
Oh, it was absolutely inadequate.
White House staff use of personal email.
Oh, for sure.
The president's business dealings abroad.
Absolutely. And I want to see his tax return.
You can hear, oh, man. Gonna do that. Oh, and that. And oh, my God, I cannot wait to do that. So, ladies and gentlemen, some of the things that are, of course, expected to come up in those 85 investigations, potential investigations, by the way, they won't get through more than maybe two or three of these. Help, if any one of these gets done, they're likely going to move to impeachment. Yeah, it would fail in the Senate, but it's pretty serious stuff. President Trump's tax returns, which my representative, Jamie Herrera Butler, voted against making him release those returns. Trump family businesses about whether they comply with the Constitution's emoluments clause, including the Chinese trademark grant to the Trump Organization. Trump's dealings with Russia included the president's preparation for his meeting with Vladimir Putin, the payment to Stephanie Clifford, a.k.a. Stormy Daniels, James Comey's firing, Trump's firing of U.S. attorneys, Trump's proposed transgender ban for the military, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin's business dealings, White House staff's personal email use, Cabinet Secretary of Travel's expenses, all over the place. Family separation policy, the travel ban, hurricane response to Puerto Rico, White House security clearances, all of them. Absolutely all of them are going to be coming up. You can say, Melvin, you know, the Democrats really gave an S. If they really, really gave an S, why are they waiting until they get power in order to do this? It is worth noting that the House Oversight Committee has blocked 64 subpoena requests submitted by Democrats as of September. Here is just some of that list, minus those with targets outside of the Trump administration. Departments of Justice, Homeland Security, Health and Human Services, withholding documents on the Trump administration child separation policy. Secretary of Commerce Wilbur Ross, withholding testimony on the Census 2020 citizenship question. Department of Veterans Affairs withholding documents relating to reports that Mar-a-Lago members are influencing department decisions. Hold on. I got to address that one for just a minute. We've heard about this, where he takes work from the Oval Office, sits at a table at Mar-a-Lago, and then invites people from around him to go over these classified documents with him. This is a real thing. This is your president. White House withholding report and documents on security clearance processes required by law. White House withholding documents on revocation of John Brennan's security clearance. White House withholding documents on John Bolton's security clearance. I bet you he didn't even pass. State Department withholding documents on retaliation. Office of Personnel Management refusing to provide briefing on complying with a court order. Department of Health and Human Services and Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services withholding documents on Medicaid work requirements. Department of Health and Human Services and Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services withholding documents on scrubbing the department websites. Now, this is happening all over the Trump administration. They're taking all this stuff, and it's the worst with the EPA, because they're just wiping the client sites off of there. So we've had this terrible storm that hit Florida, and I hear it. We're gonna rebuild. Oh, Lord is my witness. We are going to rebuild. Yes, sir. And I tell you what, there's nothing more that insurance companies like rather than paying out claims. They love paying out claims. Oh, they're most certainly going to pay out all your claims. And you're definitely going to rebuild. Florida. California. In Paradise, California, a fire. We're in fire season. It's November. It's damn near December. We're in fire season still. And this is one of the things. California is 4 inches under where they are supposed to be with respect to rainfall. Had those 4 inches fell, California would be saturated and not on fire right now. And I'm hearing it again. Rebuild! My goodness gracious, we are going to rebuild. Once again, I tell you, State Farm and Progressive, all the rest, they cannot wait to pay your claims. My goodness gracious, I bet you they're calling you right now. I bet you every single one of these insurance companies, they're calling you all the they can't wait to pay your claims. Because here's what everybody forgets. The conservative layman may decide that they don't want to believe in science because Jesus would not let that happen because we need the earth. He wouldn't let that happen. You may not believe in climate science, but I promise you that your insurance company does. They have actuaries that do. They have stockholders that do. And there is no way they are going to pay your claim. And if they do, they are not going to insure you again if you remain in the same place, because they know that this is now the new normal, that this will be happening again. And there's an entire list here of 64 different things that the Democrats have already submitted that they want to have investigations into. And the Republicans have decided, absolutely not. White House withholding documents on hurricane response. Kushner companies withholding documents on alleged housing abuses. FDIC withholding documents on EPA senior advisor banned from banking. Just a mad list of things. And of course, one of the other things that may or may not get answered is whether or not Trump loosely uses the N-word.
Can you stand at the podium and guarantee the American people they'll never hear Donald Trump utter the N-word on a recording in any context?
I can't guarantee anything, but I can tell you that the president addressed this question directly. I can tell you that I've never heard it.
As we speak right now, the Democrats, the incoming Democrats, are trying to get their hands on those Apprentice tapes. We've heard about them. Now, if we have a tape of the president saying the N-word, it's not going to hurt him with the Republicans, but it will continue to hurt him with the suburbanites. It will continue to hurt him with people that are already kind of wishy-washy on him. And then, of course, for me, I just get to say, I told you so. And these tapes of him loosely using the N-word, they're just right around the corner. Anybody that spent any amount of time around this guy goes, geez, he uses the N-word a lot. And with that, with the fact that the Democrats have this newfound power, Omarosa is back in the media again.
Are you concerned at all about being arrested?
Well, what Mr. Trump does will be brought to light. Every action that he takes against me jeopardizes him and his presidency. So I think that you should watch his behavior and how he's unraveling. And I don't have any fear. I am not going anywhere. I'm not going to be bullied. I'm not intimidated. And I'm going to go toe-to-toe with him. Donald Trump has met his match.
She went silent for a little while. She had a big blitz back when her book came out. And then she went silent, but now that the Democrats have power, she is happily jumping in front of cameras again. And let me just say, I still do not like Omarosa. But she's back out there again, and she's raising hell. And here's what we learned about Donald Trump. So Donald Trump decided that he was not going to be able to go through Veterans Day. By the way, Veterans Day, this should be easy for him. This is absolutely just the easy button, right? Because nobody... You heard from that guy that, you know, I played the clip last week and the week before, who's going to vote for Duncan Hunter because, man, the Republicans are just way better on these veterans issues. You know what I'm talking about? This should have been easy for Donald Trump. Veterans Day weekend. Get out there. Talk about how great they are. Talk about what you've done for them. Talk about the size of your hands. Just whatever it takes. All you got to do is just show up. And all the conservative media would just lap it up, right? And then spray your name across the clouds. They're just going to love all over you. But wait a minute. Something strange happened. And he was unable to hit the easy button on this one super freaking easy thing. So first, he decided to go to France. And in France, something that he had said recently came up.
A globalist is a person that wants the globe to do well, frankly, not caring about our country so much. And you know what? We can't have that. You know, they have a word. It sort of became old-fashioned. It's called a nationalist. And I say, really, we're not supposed to use that word. You know what I am? I'm a nationalist, okay? I'm a nationalist. Nationalist. Nothing.
So what he wanted was a parade to happen going through D.C. on Veterans Day. He wanted a big military parade. And they said, you know what, sir? Tens of millions of dollars. It's going to destroy the streets. The people aren't going to stand for it. Maybe the 30 or 40 people that still like you will, but everyone else, no. No one's going to stand for this. And so the thing that started this whole military thing for him was when he went to France. And they had a parade. And he goes, aha, I want one of those. So on Veterans Day, he decided that he was going to go to France again. Well, on Veterans Day, what he was supposed to do was lay a tomb at the Wreath of the Unknown Soldier. You know, and he's supposed to do all these other things praising veterans. What he did instead was he canceled all of his appearances and then cited rain. He was supposed to fly out somewhere. He decided not to fly out because he said that the helicopter can't go through the rain. Holy crap, that helicopter's absolutely freaking made for the rain. And then on Veterans Day observed, Monday, he cleared his calendar and did absolutely nothing. But not before he decided to go to France, where he thought maybe he'd see another military parade. Maybe he thought Macron was just going to be so happy to see him. And what Macron did instead, right to his face, was pointed out what's wrong with nationalism.
As the very opposite of the selfishness of a nation which only looks after its own interests, because patriotism is the exact opposite of nationalism. Nationalism is a betrayal of patriotism by saying, our interests first, who cares about the others? We erase what a nation holds dearest, what gives it life, what makes it and what is essential, its moral values. And to ruin this hope by giving in to the fascination for withdrawal, isolationism, violence, and domination would be a grave error that future generations would very rightly make us responsible for.
If you look at the photos and videos from his trip to France, it's pretty clear that he was not happy the entire time. And as a matter of fact, all the other leaders, they just decided to shut him out. They didn't want anything to do with him. But there was one point, oh my goodness, there was one time where two men found each other in France. And they smiled wonderfully when they saw each other. And this is about the only time these two smiled.
Oh, I'll tell them bluntly that you're already being trapped, because inviting Putin, that's exactly what Putin wants. Putin doesn't care about the substance of the conversation. All he wants is a picture with Donald Trump in the White House in Mar-a-Lago anywhere, because that's what we show on Russian television to demonstrate that while Russia is being treated poorly, Vladimir Putin is invincible. Vladimir Putin is the one who can fix everything, and that will give Putin enormous political power to deal with any potential discontent among his allies and henchmen in Russia.
So that's Russian Garry Kasparov. Yes, that Garry Kasparov, the chess king. He no longer lives in Russia, and he feels he's able to speak freely about Vladimir Putin. Wasn't able to when he lived there. He can now. And he points out that Donald Trump, you're being used. But this is the only time this entire weekend that Donald Trump smiled at all. So he went to France. He was an absolute failure. They said to his face that nationalism is the opposite of patriotism. They shut him out. Of course, he got to hold hands and make sweet love with Putin, and that's fine. Putin are a thing, and that's okay. And then he comes home after shunning all these ceremonial events he's supposed to do to show how much he loves the veterans. And then he clears his calendar for Monday. And now word inside the White House is that he's just sitting around and sulking and just unhappy. And what the hell is he going to do to convince you about how effing great he is? The guy's a loser. It's like an absolute loser. Just lying around, watching Fox News 24 hours a day of executive time. This is your president, guys. And I wonder if this past election, I wonder if he wasn't rebuked also by maybe even some of the people that voted for. Maybe not. I don't know. I guess it's kind of hard to, you know, the white supremacists, they sort of stick together, you know, like sticky rice or whatever, you know, white.
Embraced a rising absolutism from a willingness to default on America's debt by not paying our bills to a refusal to even meet, much less consider, a qualified nominee for the Supreme Court because he happened to be nominated by a Democratic president. None of this is conservative. I don't mean to pretend I'm channeling Abraham Lincoln now, but that's not what he had in mind, I think, when he helped form the Republican Party. It's not conservative. It sure isn't normal. It's radical.
I mentioned 2 years ago that if Donald Trump wins just the nomination, I wasn't even thinking about the presidency, just the nomination, I said, that will begin the end of the Republican Party. Who are they? What do they stand for? Do they even know anymore? Or is it just reaction, hate? So there's an article that came out in May of this year. I didn't get a chance to read it then. I was digging back through some of my old articles and I found it. The headline, Democrats propose funding teacher pay raises by canceling tax cuts for the wealthy. This is from NPR. This is May. Okay, so they don't know what they're going to do. This is May. Here it is. Responding to teacher walkouts across the country, congressional Democrats proposed raising teacher salaries by canceling the tax cut for the nation's top 1% earners. The Republican-controlled Congress is unlikely to support the idea of giving states and school districts $50 billion over a decade to fund the teacher raises at the expense of dismantling the hard-won tax bill, but the proposal gives Democrats an issue that they can use ahead of the November midterm elections. Teachers have won widespread support, even in conservative areas, as they complain about low pay. So, this is one of the things that you can expect to potentially be on the docket. Now, of course, it will likely die in the Senate. And if it doesn't, by the time it gets to Trump desk, he's going to go, nope. Because remember, after the tax cuts passed, he went to Mar-a-Lago and he said, for the whole place to hear, I just made all of you a little more rich. But with this kind of a message, and I was a part of one of those teacher walkouts in the name of low pay. My wife worked without a contract. They hadn't gotten a raise in 10 years. I went out there with them. I wasn't out there every day, but I was out there when I could be. So I got on the damn front lines of this thing. And these teachers are not treated right. And we do not need these damn tax cuts. And I think it's that kind of shamelessly progressive message that helped the Democrats. And I really, really hope they keep it. There's word right now that Nancy Pelosi is going to be the next speaker. Okay, I do not dislike Nancy Pelosi, but sometimes her seemingly pragmatic approach isn't what we need. So I was listening to one new incoming House member talk earlier today on MSNBC, and he said, we're proposing, okay, this is him talking, not all the Democrats. He says, me and some of the progressive caucus are proposing that college be paid for. Right? Take the tax cuts, college be paid for. Simple as that, you know, or a tax on Wall Street, college be paid for. And Nancy Pelosi came back with, well, maybe we can get them some credits. Maybe we can get them a lower loan rate. No. Unashamed, unabashedly progressive. We're going to do this bold thing. We're going to do that bold thing. Don't get wishy-washy now, Democrats. This idea that you had about canceling the tax cuts and raising teacher pay, let's go that direction. Don't talk to me about lowering the interest rates on a loan that shouldn't have been a freaking loan in the first place.
The claim that everything will turn out okay because there are people inside the White House who secretly aren't following the president's orders. That is not a check. I'm being serious here. That's not how our democracy is supposed to work. They're not doing us a service by actively promoting 90% of the crazy stuff that's coming out of this White House and then saying, don't worry, we're preventing the other 10%.
Now, you may remember there was an op-ed in the New York Times earlier this year. They wrote an op-ed and they said, I'm inside the White House. I'm in a cabinet position and I'm a part of the resistance and we're making sure that, and that's what Obama was talking about there. He goes, we're going to make sure that none of this super duper crazy stuff happens. We didn't hear much about that. We heard the White House bellyaching for a long, long time about how, who is this person? We're going to find them. And you know what happened? According to Omarosa, who's been giving interviews all week long, she said they found the person and they quietly let them go. Seems to me the kind of thing that should have been detected by the media. So I suppose we may or may not find out in the coming days who that person was if they have indeed been let go. Because if there is anybody in this administration that is not absolutely wedded to the idea of this 1,000 years of peace. You know, the Republicans are, 1,000 years of Republican rule, 1,000 years of peace. We're going to get every damn thing. If you're not on this ship, then you need to. I often call it white power, white nationalism, economic royalism. But there's a New York Times op-ed that came out recently by a gentleman named Tim Wu. He's a law professor who specializes in antitrust. And he introduced to me, when I read the op-ed, a new phrase I'd never heard of before, economic bigness. The headline, be afraid of economic bigness. Be very afraid. Quoting here, in the aftermath of the Second World War, an urgent question presented itself. How can we prevent the rise of fascism from happening again? Which, of course, it is right now. Back to the article. Common answers to the question stress the importance of a free press, the rule of law, stable government, robust civic institutions, and common decency. But as undoubtedly important as these factors are, we often overlook something else: the threat to democracy posed by monopoly and excessive corporate concentration, what the Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandy called the curse of bigness. Post-war observers like Senator Haley M. Kilgore of West Virginia argued that the German economic structure, which was dominated by monopolies and cartels, was essential to Hitler's consolidation of power. Germany at that time, Mr. Kilgore explained, built up a great series of industrial monopolies in steel, rubber, coal, and other materials. The monopoly soon got control of Germany and brought Hitler to power and forced virtually the whole world into war. To suggest that any one cause accounted for the rise of fascism goes too far. For the Great Depression, anti-Semitism, the fear of communism, weak political institutions, they were all to blame. But as writers like Dieremond Jeffries and Daniel Crane have detailed, extreme economic concentration does create conditions ripe for dictatorship. It is a story that should sound uncomfortably familiar. An economic crisis yields widespread economic suffering, feeding an appetite for nationalistic and an extremist leader. The leader rides to power, promising a return to national greatness, deliverance from economic suffering, and the defeat of enemies foreign and domestic, including big business. Yet in reality, the leader seeks alliances with large enterprises and the great monopolies so long as they obey him, for each has something the other wants. He gets their loyalty, and they avoid democratic accountability. So, here's the way it goes. These gigantic corporations argue for something that they refer to as deregulation. Let's get rid of all regulation. Get rid of regulation. Regulation, by the way, are consumer protections. Get rid of regulations. We're going to create more jobs. Get rid of regulations. Right? And what they really want to do is they want to internalize profits and externalize the costs. And so they pay for all these politicians that are willing to make their dreams come true. They pay for all these guys, lots of money in the campaign coffers to put all these guys in power. And then these guys get the power and they start cutting said regulations. They also start cutting all the antitrust laws. And there starts being more mergers and acquisitions. These two companies are now one company. These two big companies are now a bigger company. These two bigger companies are now bigger. You see where I'm going with this. And before you know it, we have something that's referred to as the illusion of choice. They say, well, if you walk down the bread aisle, there's 30, 40 different types of bread. Actually, there's probably made by 5 different companies. Or maybe even 2 different companies. And you can find this everywhere. You can find this in chips. You can find this in drugs. You can find this in meats. You can find this in frozen foods. You can find it in everything. You go, God, I like this company over this company and this company over this company and this company over this. Do you know how many brands are owned by Coke Industries? I don't know you. I don't know who you are. I do not know where you live. But I promise you that you have something in your house, and not just one thing. Likely a dozen different things that are manufactured by Coke Industries and you do not know. One hand washes the other. And when these folks, these dictators, come to power, they rely on these large corporations, these billionaires, these moneyed interests. They rely, even after Donald Trump got the power by we're going to stop them, big business, you're out of here. And then he got in and he immediately cozied up the big business, drained the swamp, got in and filled the swamp with 10 times as many creatures. And these two are now working hand in glove. The take back of the house was just the first step. It's a very important step, but it's just the first step. We have to watch out for economic bigness because everyone's going to want to stay home. Hey, I did my part. Voted in 2018. Of course, we might have a lot of people turn out for the 2020 election because, hey, 2020. And it's a presidential election. That draws out more people. But I know that there's an awful lot of people that are just going to, we did. No. As I said before, and as I say again, and as I say right now, the fight, ladies and gentlemen, the fight is never over. We'll be right back.
Mr. Lamb was brilliant. He ran as a Republican. So it worked for him. He certainly didn't run as a Democrat. Hunter Lamb ran as a guy who would line himself up with President Trump.
You know, the lesson was run away from Nancy Pelosi and run with Donald Trump.
At the end of the day, he ran as a Republican.
Hunter Lamb ran as a Republican. He was a Republican in name. So you had a Republican in name versus a Republican in truth.
Do you remember all of the special elections and off-year elections that happened prior to the midterm elections? And one of them was the Conor Lamb one. And I remember when Conor Lamb won, they just the way they explained it away, right? And this is what happens when you ignore, okay, the roof is leaking. You go, nope, roof's not leaking. I don't feel any water. Water's running down your face. Nope, I don't feel any water. Your kitchen catches on fire. You feel the heat. Your clothes start burning off your body. You know, your hair starts singeing. You smell burnt hair. You feel the 1,000-degree heat. And you go, nope, this place isn't on fire. Well, when the Conor Lamb thing happened, and of course when the Roy Moore thing happened in Alabama, they went, nope, that's what he gets. Because he ran as a Republican. Because our brand still works, and everyone still believes in it. And then, of course, the election happened a couple of weeks ago, and the president said, "Well, had they ran for me, right? Had they ran on my side? Had they like everything was about him?" And he and then, of course, the argument that he constantly made was not that the country needed to be protected, not that our institutions needed to be protected, but that he himself needed to be protected.
Our Justice Department and our FBI. Have to start doing their job and doing it right and doing it now. Because people are angry. People are angry. What's happening is a disgrace. And at some point, I wanted to stay out, but at some point, if it doesn't straighten out properly, I want them to do their job. I will get involved and I'll get in there if I have to.
Protect me. So Jeff Sessions has been pushed out, and I gotta say, I just never really thought that it would happen. Even after Jeff Sessions had recused himself, I go, you know, Jeff Sessions is such a stark, raving racist. There's no way that he's gonna go anywhere.
He's a man of integrity, a man of principle, and a man of total, utter resolve. Jeff understands that the job of Attorney General is to serve and protect the people of the United States. And that is exactly what he will do and do better than anybody else can.
It is an honor beyond words to serve under you and your leadership. I look forward to making sure that every ounce of strength I have and that the people of the Department of Justice have is going to be focused on preserving and protecting the Constitution and the safety of this country.
Aw, do you remember that? Do you remember when they had their first date? Do you remember when they fell in love and they just got all kissy face on stage? You know, much like he does with Vladimir Putin. And then the romance fell out because it was never really about justice or the government or institutions, the Justice Department. It was never about any of that. It was about protect Trump. And Sessions had and still has all of those things. I mean, the guy was an absolute upside down and inside out wild-eyed racist.
Powerful incentives were created for aliens to come here illegally and claim fear of return. In effect, word spread that by asserting this fear, they could remain in the United States. The vast majority of the current asylum claims we're seeing are not valid.
Full on willing to engage in conspiracy theories, full on willing to spread all of the president's hateful, racist rhetoric and untruth, all these things, and pushed out. And now Brian Whitaker has been put in there because Brian Whitaker has said on record that, of course, well, this investigation needs to be shut down, and he is now in charge of this investigation. Hold on. There are people in the streets. There are protests from wall to wall. There are people calling their House members. There are people calling their senators. A vote happened in the Senate today to protect Robert Mueller. And, of course, it failed. Mitch McConnell wouldn't even let it get brought up. But Jeff Merkley from Oregon said that he's going to bring, and this is new. I mean, even though the Democrats didn't win the Senate, they're starting to get some balls. Sorry to use that phrase. Jeff Merkley said he will bring the Senate to a halt if this thing does not pass. And he said he's going to bring it up again and again and again and again. So we still have a whole bunch of outstanding races right now. Oh, God. Okay. All right. Let's do these state by state. First of all, let's go to Mississippi.
Obviously, I'd like to ask the senator about the public hanging comment.
We put out a statement yesterday, and we stand by that statement.
Could you expand on it then, why you said it, what you meant by it, and why people in the state should not see it as offensive?
We put out the statement yesterday.
All right. We'll get back to this broken record in a minute. I don't know if any of you have heard of her, but her name is Cindy Hyde Smith. She ended up being appointed to this chair back in March to fill in for Thad Cochran. And so now she's running for the seat for real. She doesn't have enough votes to cross the finish line, but then again, neither does his opponent. And recently, she decided to say something dumb when somebody had a camera on him. And by the way, Republicans, assume that there is always a camera on. Quoting him from CNN, praising a cattle rancher and thanking him for his support, the Mississippi Republican senator said this: if he invited me to a public hanging, I'd be in the front row. And 4 days later, 41.4% of the vote went to her, and 40.4%, a full 1% lower, went to Democratic Representative Mike Espy, who, by the way, is black. Mississippi Burning. Okay, this is where those three civil rights workers were killed, where the Mississippi Burning movie was made about them, those three civil rights workers. In Mississippi, there have been more hangings than in any other state in the union. Historically, more hangings than in any other state of the union. And she thought it a good idea to joke about hanging. In a comment on November 2nd, I referred to accepting an invitation to a speaking engagement. In referencing the one who invited me, I used an exaggerated expression of regard, and any attempt to turn this into a negative connotation is ridiculous. 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 So the easy thing to say, I mean, put out your statement, but then when the press asks you about it, go ahead and say, you know what, completely out of line, shouldn't have said that, my apologies to Mr. Espy, my apologies to everyone else, I should not be joking about hanging black men, especially when I'm running for an election and people are clearly still cool with that because they still voted for her. I should not be joking about hanging black men in a state where tons and tons of black men have been hung. But how did she respond to it instead?
Obviously, I'd like to ask the senator about the public hanging comment.
We put out a statement yesterday, and we stand by that statement.
Could you expand on it then, why you said it, what you meant by it, and why people in the state should not see it as offensive?
We put out the statement yesterday, and it's available, and we stand by that statement.
Senator, are you familiar with Mississippi's history of lynchings?
I put out a statement yesterday, and that's all I'm going to say about it.
Governor, you mentioned that it shouldn't be viewed with a negative connotation. Could you at least explain?
I put out a statement yesterday, and we stand by the statement, and that's all I'm going to say about it.
Is that phrasing in your everyday lingo, in your vocabulary?
I put out a statement yesterday.
Governor,
we stand by the statement.
We're going to continue to ask these questions until you, with all due respect, address the question that we're addressing. What context did you say that in? And have you ever been to a public hanging? What is a public hanging in your context?
We did address it yesterday. Thank you very much.
What is she afraid of? In places like Mississippi, in places like Georgia, and we'll get to them in a minute, this kind of thing still works for the Republicans. It may not forever because of changing demographics and the fact that, well, people are becoming a little less racist. But if she says, you know what, that was a mistake, I shouldn't have said that, it's perceived, first of all, as weakness among the other Republicans. You got to stand strong. And she doesn't want to be perceived as weak. But the other thing is if she disowns this comment, she might lose some of her supporters. There is a runoff coming up in about a week and a half, 2 weeks, for this seat. Because it was so close, because it was within the margin, there's going to be a runoff. And she can't, with such a narrow margin, she can't afford to have the white racist Republicans, you know, and they're not all racist, but she cannot afford to have any of them not turn out for her if she dismisses this. You got to understand, when these folks talk in these public arenas, especially when they're talking to very favorable crowds, they engage in this stuff and they engage in it very loosely and freely. And the crowds just love this stuff. I've played this before and I'm going to play it now. Donald Trump still to this day often reads a poem on the road titled The Snake.
On her way to work one morning, down the path along the lake, a tender-hearted woman saw a poor, half-frozen snake. His pretty colored skin had been all frosted with the dew. Poor thing, she cried, I'll take you in, and I'll take care of you. The border. Take me in, oh tender woman. Take me in, for heaven's sake. Take me in, oh tender woman, sighed the vicious snake. She wrapped him up all cozy in a comforter of silk and laid him by her fireside with some honey and some milk. She hurried home from work that night, and as soon as she arrived, she found that pretty snake she'd taken in had been revived. Take me in, O tender woman. Take me in, for heaven's sake. Take me in, O tender woman, sighed that vicious snake. She clutched him to her bosom. You're so beautiful, she cried. But if I hadn't brought you in by now, oh heavens, you would have died. She stroked his pretty skin again and kissed him and held him tight. But instead of saying thank you, that snake gave her a vicious bite. Take me in, oh tender woman. Take me in, for heaven's sake. Take me in, oh tender woman, sighed the vicious snake. I have saved you, cried the woman. And you've bitten me, heavens, why? You know your bite is poisonous, and now I'm going to die. Oh, shut up, silly woman, said the reptile with a grin. You knew damn well I was a snake before you took me in.
When Brian Kemp was running to be the Georgia governor, in the primary, he ran this super duper racist ad.
I'm Brian Kemp. I'm so conservative. I blow up government spending. I own guns that no one's taken away. My chainsaw's ready to rip up some regulations. I got a big truck, just in case I need to round up criminal illegals and take them home myself. Yep, I just said that. I'm Brian Kemp. If you want a politically incorrect conservative, that's me.
And right now, he has a pretty good chance of becoming the governor of Georgia. He's in a fight right now with Stacey Abrams. See, in Georgia, they've been busting their ass for years to kick black people off the rolls. One of the things that they engaged in was this cross-check, this interstate cross-check. And they've just been wiping thousands and thousands of largely, I mean, every so often, it's someone that's white, but it's a very, very small minority, wiping thousands of African-Americans off the roll. And now they've got this really, really close race in their state. And of course, I played this clip last week of these people showing up, and they're not just not on the voter rolls anymore. They've been completely wiped off. There's no record that they voted at all. So in Georgia, it's still undecided at this moment. We don't know what's going to happen in Georgia. So we're going to keep an eye on that. It seems to me that with this level of racism and us, the kind of people we are, should be a slam dunk. Don't vote for that guy that's going to round up them criminal illegals with a dang gum pickup truck. Huh. For some reason, some folks still have a little bit of trouble seeing the light. Oh, God. And then there's Florida.
Ron loves playing with the kids.
Build the wall.
He reads stories.
Then Mr. Trump said, "You're fired." I love that part.
He's teaching Madison to talk.
Make America great again.
And for whatever reason, Florida had trouble not voting for this guy. So, of course, these guys have been kicking folks off the voter rolls, too. But there's another thing that they did in Florida. And, of course, so we've got both a Senate seat and the governorship in Florida. Florida can't seem to run a freaking election. But clearly, at least some of this is by design. So I don't know what the ballot looks like in your state, but in my state, there's this long white piece of paper. And there's two columns. And you've got bubbles to fill in on this side, and you got bubbles to fill in on this side. But usually on the front of the ballot, generally on the left side or the right side, doesn't matter, one column will be dedicated to instructions. Only instructions on how to vote. And they were warned in every state, up to and including Florida, on that half of the page, that front half of the page. So you got 75% of the page where you can put, you know, and if you need to have multiple pages, you can't. But you got 75% of it to put candidates. And then one quarter of it has to go to instructions. And on the side that has instructions, even if there's room underneath the instructions, do not put any races under that part. Do not put any races underneath the instructions. Because when it goes through the reader, it's not going to read that part. Because that part is only supposed to be for instructions. And Florida, that's where they decided. At the bottom of the instructions on the front side, right there, where they were told not to put anything, that's where they decided to put the governor's race. And so if we end up with some sort of a hand recount, then it's very possible because all of a sudden we have all these people that voted overwhelmingly for all these other Democrats, but then they didn't vote for, say, the governor. And it looks like that might – see, these are the dirty tricks that I'm talking about that happened. But so we got Florida out. We still got Georgia out. We still got Mississippi out. That's a Senate seat in Mississippi with Hyde Smith. But there is one state where we were able to resolve things as of this point. And amazingly, it is in Arizona.
And let's go fly, fight, and win.
It takes a lot to overshadow a member of Congress flying a World War II era jet around her state, announcing a Senate campaign. But President Trump's reported vulgar comments about African countries managed to do it, stepping on former fighter pilot and Tucson Congresswoman Martha McSally's Senate rollout.
My friend Martha McSally.
I had to ask. When the president talks about immigrants from ish-hole countries, is that racist? Is that acceptable to you?
Well, let me just say I speak a little salty behind closed doors at times as well, and so I'm not going to throw the first stone on using any language.
If McSally, who attended last week's televised immigration meeting at the White House, backs away from the president, she'll hear about it from her primary opponent, Dr. Kelly Ward.
McSally is pretending to be an ally of President Trump.
She greeted McSally's entrance to the race with this ad, calling her a pretender.
You call Martha McSally a pretender?
Yes.
Explain.
Well, it's pretty clear she's a campaign conservative, just like we've seen from John McCain.
So
and Jeff
when
Flake.
It came to Arizona, they had no problem running towards the president. And just doing absolutely everything that he wanted, and aligning themselves with them as much as they could. Now, this clip, I played this clip that's playing now, I played this clip earlier in the year in full. And it's all these people that were running to be senator and all these other seats. And they just thought if they just run the most racist race possible, they're going to win. And then in Arizona, they kept counting the votes. And Kristen Sinema has won. Couple of big ones here. First of all, she's the first woman senator from Arizona ever. Then she's also the first bisexual. And then she's the first Democrat in about 25 years to be elected to that seat. And what Donald Trump wants to do now is he says, stop counting the votes. Stop counting the votes. Whatever happened on election night, that should be all there is. Because it appears that the wave is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I enjoyed that after she won, Kristen Sinema got up and decided to give this speech where she didn't, we're right, you're wrong, get out. She decided to actually cite John McCain in her speech.
Senator John McCain stood for everything we stand for as Arizonans, fighting for what you believe in, standing up for what's right, even if you stand alone. He taught us to always assume the best in others, to seek compromise instead of sowing division, and to always put country ahead of party. Senator McCain said, "But we have always had so much more in common with each other than in disagreement. If only we remember that and give each other the benefit of the presumption that we all love our country, we will get through these challenging times."
So if we get all of this deregulation that these guys want, it won't be long before we're able to completely overturn child labor laws. Melvin, come on. Child labor laws. Everybody is against making kids work. I don't think you know. Ladies and gentlemen, let me enlighten you just a little bit. So you may remember back during the early aughts, Newt Gingrich was running for president. And one of the things that Newt Gingrich said was that poor kids should be able to work as janitors in their school. This is real. I don't have the clip handy right now, but it's pretty damn easy to find. He said they should be able to work as janitors in their schools. Wow. As if school is not awkward and embarrassing enough for the rest of us. Yeah, we should get to be janitors in the schools. They don't have a problem with child labor. If you work on a farm, if you work in agriculture right now, there are little, if any, laws that govern how you can treat children. And you say, Melvin, come on. Children are not going to be in factories. You look at those old photos of children working in factories. Children are not going to be working in factories. Come on, Melvin, knock it off. No one's listening to you. Oh, yeah? But on these farms where there's little to no protections for consumers, and where the supply lines and the supply chains are not all that transparent, child slavery is happening right now, right here. Melvin, it's happening in China, and maybe it's happening in India, and maybe it's happening in Bangladesh, and maybe. But consider this. Do you know where your shirt came from? Do you know where your smartphone came from? Do you know where your chocolate came from? Do you know where your cigarettes come from? There's a new documentary that's coming out right now, and it's not getting a ton of press. I just learned about it myself, and I've not got a chance to see it. But its time could not be better, and it's called Invisible Hands.
In many places in the world, the children are working day in and day out as slaves. At least animals can roam around freely, but these children can't. They have no dream.
In conservative economics, you'll often hear about the invisible hand of the free market. The invisible hand. We don't need regulations. We don't need rules. We don't need blah, 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 blah. We just need the invisible hand. So I love the fact that what they decided to title this movie was Invisible Hands. Yes, there is an invisible hand in the seemingly free market. And those invisible hands are those of our nation's children.
He kept telling us he was sick, he was feeling sick. And he passed out and we just laid him up under the leaves until we could get the ambulance to get there. And it's like, that was like the scariest day of my life. Like, I thought I was gonna lose my best friend because of it.
How old was he?
He was 12. I was 13, I just turned 13, he was 12.
Okay. Work in tobacco farming is treated just like work in any other agricultural crop, which means, you know, 12-year-olds can be out in the field working 50 or 60 hours a week, and that's perfectly legal.
A few years back, the Obama administration proposed regulations to label tobacco as hazardous.
Powerful agricultural lobbying groups came out strongly opposed to these regulations. And in the end, the Obama administration caved to these groups and really abandoned child farm workers. We need to see more political will from our policymakers in Washington to protect kids who are at risk working on farms.
We all hate all of the money that's in politics. Yet, it is a conservative court conservative decisions, conservative politicians, and conservative presidents that have brought us to that point. We all hate the school shootings, but it is conservative leadership that has brought us that. It's the NRA willing to give too much money to conservative politicians. Conservative politicians unwilling. Man, they'll fight voters all day long. But if you want to buy as many guns as humanly possible and shoot up a school, this is just another thing that has been brought to us by conservative rule. If you hate the fact that there are child slaves in America, then you're like everybody else. They say these are extremist leftist positions and how in God you hate America. These are not extremist leftist positions. No one likes the school shootings. Nobody likes all the money in politics. Nobody likes child slavery. But conservatives still continue to win sometimes. And it's not as though I want single party rule in this country, because I most certainly do not. But if you notice, every single thing we hate, the fact that our healthcare industry is run by these greedy maniacs. And I'm sorry to put it that way. If you hate the way healthcare is run, if you think your healthcare is expensive and inefficient, thank a conservative politician. School shootings, thank a conservative politician. You know, all this money that's floating around in politics, thank a conservative politician. They say, you're an extremist leftist. And no, I'm not. Not a lot of us are. These are centrist positions. They seem left. They seem like they're to the left because you do not like them. If you're taking that money from the NRA, if you're taking that money from Koch Industries, you know, if you're taking money from the KKK, it's going to seem extreme to you. But this is where America is at. And the Democrats need not run towards the center like they're being told. And they need not listen to all these people saying, don't get too out of control. Don't overreach. The Democratic positions are America's positions. And they need to run as unashamed, unabashed progressives. Because everybody, and I promise you, damn near everybody. Yeah, you're never going to get the Nazis that still support Trump to this. You're not going to get them. Fine, let them go. But winning with 70%, winning with all of the same people, yeah, that's still a thing. That could still happen. That's what you should work towards. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on the Fiery Camp at our official home, tficpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/tficpo. Listen on the go using the Podbean app or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tficpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. Send us always. Thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out of. We will prevail. Special thanks to Kevin for producing. Thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.